Welcome to Shout at the Devil, the best and most likely only Blue Devil podcast on the internet. I'm Justin, and with me is David. How's it going, David?
It's going really good this week, Justin.
Alright. Well, we are knee-deep into our fourth episode, which, you know, I think that makes us veterans at this point. And, I mean, everybody else is probably shouting, "You idiots, no you're not." But, hey, I'm gonna ignore that. And I'm thinking we need to start, you know, acting like some real pros in the podcast business. And by that I mean, starting this episode, we are going to put in a couple of promos for other podcasts. Things that we like, things that we've heard great things about and haven't found reasons to dislike. And, you know, occasionally things Shag does, because got to have a little charity here and there. Yeah, but before we get into that, how about we talk about what was on the spinner rack this week, David?
Well, if you went to the spinner rack, and this would have been for comics cover dated August 1984, but to buy this fresh off the rack, you would have had to go to May 24th, 1984. As far as what else was on the rack at that point, kind of got split up a little differently this week. We have Archie Giant Series Magazine, number 538, and Archie's Girls, Betty and Veronica, number 331. Lucky guy. From Eclipse Comics, we have Aztec Ace, number 3, Miss Tree, number 8, and Zot, by Scott McCloud, number 3. From Charlton Comics, they were just about done at this point. I think they had about one more month left in them. You had Battlefield Action, 88, and Fightin' Army, number 171. From First Comics, you had John Sable Freelance, number 15. Warp Graphics gave us ElfQuest, number 19. I'll skip over to Marvel. We had Conan the King, number 24. Daredevil, number 210, with a really great-looking Mike Zeck cover. Secret Wars, number 5, which features the X-Men striking back. So you got a picture of the X-Men coming in to fight the bad guys who are just off camera, with all the main Marvel heroes kind of sprawled out in front of them unconscious. Yeah, New Mutants number 19, Tarzan of the Apes number 2, The Thing number 15, and West Coast Avengers number 1. Now that was the mini-series that was introducing the West Coast idea. Then from DC, a great Jim Aparo cover for Batman and the Outsiders number 13. I'm sure Young Shag was chomping at the bit to grab that one off the rack. Green Lantern number 179, which I believe introduced the Demolition Crew and had Dave Gibbons doing cover duty and art duty on that comic. Remember that one well. I bought that one off the rack. Infinity Incorporated, number 5, with Jerry Ordway, drawing Earth 2 superheroes. You don't get much better than that. Legion of Superheroes, number 1, which was their first Baxter issue. New Talent Showcase, number 8, which had a cover by Terry Shoemaker and Carl Kiesel. Saga of the Swamp Thing, number 27. Featuring the Demon. Sergeant Rock, number 391, which has another great Sergeant Rock and Easy Company walking into a trap as the Nazis are hiding from them. Covered by Joe Kubert. He was like a master at that. He would have the Nazis hiding somewhere and Rock and Easy would be walking in or swimming in or whatever into a situation where they were hiding. Supergirl, number 22. Thriller number 9, and Warlord number 84, which I'm going to point out right now also featured as a backup story a Barren Earth story. It was episode 19 of the story that was going on, but it was written by our very own Gary Cohn. So as we go through, you know, from here on out, I'm going to be trying to mention where Gary, Dan Mishkin, and Paris Cullins were also appearing, whether it be DC or someplace else.
Sounds like a hell of an idea to me.
So that was the spinner rack. And I can tell you, young Dave picked up several of these comics off the spinner racks.
Well, we're not going to go into how young I am, although we do have a piece of listener feedback that picks on me a little bit for it.
Oh.
I think here's a good spot to cut for our first promo to add in. So, I hope you guys enjoy, and if you haven't checked out this podcast, which I really doubt because how else would you have found out about us, check them out, alright? We'll be back in a minute.
Aquaman and Firestorm fighting crime together. Soak them down
or burn them up.
No one does it better. Whenever you find trouble, they'll always be there to catch them in a bubble
or even torch their hair.
They stand for truth and justice
in sea, on land,
in air. Aquaman and Firestorm, they make a super pair.
The Fire and Water Podcast, celebrating Aquaman, King of the Seven Seas, and Firestorm, the Nuclear Man.
Available at Fire and Water Podcast, Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, here to talk about Firestorm. Along with me is my co-host, Rob Kelly, here to talk about some guy that talks to fish.
Really? You're going to pull this crap during the promo? It's bad enough. I have to put up with your shenanigans every...
And we're back. Right now, we are ready to review Blue Devil number 3. And David, why don't you tell us a little bit about this cover?
This cover features Metallo standing over the prone body of Blue Devil, who has a giant blast hole in his chest. He's obviously unconscious, arms up, legs kind of splayed, and Metallo saying, "Now that you've met Metallo, the man with the kryptonite heart, do you still think you can stand between me and Superman, punk?" I always want to read that last part in Clint Eastwood's voice.
Yeah, I agree. And I gotta say, I absolutely love the look of Metallo at this point.
Yeah.
Because I've seen, like, later appearances, like the new Krypton storyline a couple of years ago. He pretty much looked like a Terminator with a kryptonite heart.
Yeah.
And I'm not as crazy about that look, but I love this look for Metallo.
Yeah, this looks like a guy in a suit, more so than some of his other looks have had. Actually, on the interiors, it almost looks like a guy wearing a helmet, and maybe it was at that point, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with my Metallo history. I just know he's an interesting Superman villain.
Yeah. He also got what I assume is Dr. Clyburn there with a few other scientists and one of Metallo's goons on the back behind them. And it's a great, great cover.
It is, and it's, I don't know about in the 80s, but compared to nowadays, you wouldn't really see that many times that I can think of anyway, where the hero of the comic is getting his ass handed to him. And that's exactly what this cover shows.
Yep. And, spoiler warning, kids, this scene pretty much does appear in the comic.
Wait, you mean that actually happened every so often? It wasn't just gimmicky covers with no relevance whatsoever to the issue?
Every once in a while they would manage to sync it up.
Wow.
Blue Devil way more often than not.
And that's one thing I've always loved about this series. So let's flip open. And we start off with another issue without Dan in the front. Well, sort of. We have him in the surprint in schematics with Starlab scientists looking over it and being amazed. One of the scientists says, "Get a load of that hardware. He couldn't have built all this stuff by himself." And they go on to talk about how he's a remarkable man and that the suit is really an extraordinary piece of engineering. And turns out they're not just looking at a scan, because he is in the room with them. And at the bottom of the page, he says, "Tell you the truth, Doc, I'd be a lot more impressed with it myself if I could get this damn thing off." And we flip to the next page, which, aside from one coloring error, where one of his hands looks perfectly normal instead of blue, we see Dan splayed out on this, some sort of examination table, and a bunch of scientists around studying every part of the suit.
Now, one thing that struck me about this, and going back and rereading, is the fact that his suit didn't just become part of it became part of his body, but it included all the mechanical stuff. It didn't, like, morph it into 100% flesh and blood.
I don't think that happens until he is revived by Faust in the 90s.
Right. I mean, it is a suit, basically, of armor, if you will, bonded to his skin. All the servos and motors and everything are still there, which I thought made it very interesting.
I agree, and even one of the scientists says, look at this, there's some molecular bonding between his organic structure and the mechanisms of the suit.
Now, for me, this two-page splash on pages 2 and 3 is very evocative of Kirby. You've got people everywhere, you've got machines everywhere, you've got stuff, you don't know what the heck it's doing.
And you've got machines shooting out beams with Kirby dots in them, so I can totally see the Kirby influence there.
Yeah. I mean, you got people above him, beside him, below him, over to the both sides, in front of him.
There are people everywhere.
They are literally surrounding him.
Yeah, I'd be feeling a little claustrophobic in this case.
Yeah, right. And they're also looking for more, find out more about what happened to see if they can figure out how to undo what was done to him.
Yes, they are. And for this issue's credits, we are looking at a title, Heart of Stone. And the writers and co-creators, Gary Cohn and Dan Mishkin, as well as co-creator Paris Collins as penciler, Gary Martin as inker, Todd Klein, letterer, Michelle Wolfman as colorist, and Alan Gold as the editor. And one of the scientists says, perhaps if we went over how it happened once again, we might find a clue to undoing it. And we get a nice, succinct, one-page, very action-y layout of what's happened the last couple issues. We see Nibiros zapping him, we see him being unable to get the suit off, and we see that the stuff with Shockwave was just last night.
Very quick, to the point, get your point across, moves you on with the story.
Yeah, you learn everything you need to know. You could pick this issue up off the shelf without having read 1 or 2, and you know what's going on. You are up to speed just as much as everyone else. Alright. Turning to the next page, we find out who the boss was referenced in the last one, because the boss turns out to be Metallo. And he's saying, how could you do this to me? I sent you on a simple little errand and you botched it. And turns out the experimental kryptonite was him attempting to power himself and beat Superman.
Which is, of course, his whole M.O.
Yeah, he's kind of one-dimensional in that regard, but, I mean, Superman has very few interesting villains. I mean, what?
Huh?
I can hear Bailey just shouting from here.
Yeah, you're...
I'm sorry, Bailey, I'm not a huge Superman fan. Forgive me. Let's see. So speaking of Superman, we actually see the news offices of television station WGBS back when that was a thing in DC Comics.
Yeah, well, Clark worked there.
And we see someone talking to Clark about the Shockwave and Blue Devil fight. And we find out why Superman wasn't around fighting his own damn fight. Because he has his thought bubble saying, I'm glad this Blue Devil character showed up since I was on a mission in space as Superman.
And the continuity people were happy. Yay!
Yay!
Because if they didn't say that, then they go, well, where does this fit in with Superman's continuity? He wasn't in space at this time. Blah, 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 blah. Never mind. Sorry.
Yep. It's fun poking at the continuity people, but I'm glad that they at least explained for the continuity of this series why he wasn't around.
So am I. Honestly. I like to poke fun every now and then, but I tend to not worry where this story would have to fit in. You know, it could be 3 months ago, his Superman's time, or 3 months from now, Superman's time. It doesn't really matter to me.
Exactly. And more importantly, this was pre-crisis, so it could have been doing everything everywhere, because much like post-convergence, there is an unlimited number of multiverses.
Exactly. Now he also finds out that Star Labs has some sort of super kryptonite.
And that look on his face is classic. Or classic, I think is how Rob Kelly says it. God, we're just crapping on everyone today. Well, I am. You're kind and generous. I'm the mean, horrible person.
Just remember that when you send in feedback, folks.
Yes, send your hate mail to me. All right. So we see that Marla is being downright forceful, saying, "That's how it has to be, Werner. Either we drop the injunction against Dan Cassidy, or you can forget about our five-picture contract." And she knows that he's physically attached to the suit, so she knows that he can't just take it off.
Yep. And I guess if we ever get a chance to talk to one of them, why they just didn't have them, these characters, inform Werner. I mean, obviously, Werner's a dick, but...
He probably wouldn't have believed him.
Probably.
He probably would have been the skeptic and been like, "Oh, that's BS. This is all, you know, the footage you are showing me is all, yeah, this is a good movie editing." There's no way there's such a thing as demons.
A real demon that popped up and zapped him.
Exactly. To be fair, though, I'd be pretty skeptical, too, if I was in that universe and someone tried telling me that. I don't know if I'd buy it.
Yeah. Marla mentions that Sharon is going out to the East Coast to keep Danny company. I'm sure she is. And watch out for him.
I mean, that totally didn't happen.
Yeah, well, you know.
We actually do see that that's something that he's worried about, because they show that before he ran away, he says, "Look at me, I'm not me anymore. I'm a blue devil. Don't you understand? I thought that you and I, that we... But now I know that that's never going to happen, and it's tearing me apart." And then we get back to Star Labs in the present day, and it shows Blue Devil being given his costume back, saying, "You can dress now, Mr. Cassidy." And here's a question I've always wondered. Like, originally you think, okay, the suit that he made, you know, the blue and yellow is part of it, and I get that that's his superhero garb. But why didn't he... granted, he'd still be blue and have giant horns, but why didn't he just wear street clothes when he wasn't fighting anything?
Because comics.
That's a good enough reason.
That's the only reason. The only thing I can come up with is because comics. Because there's no reason for most of these heroes to be walking around in their superhero costumes every day, every moment of every day.
Fair point. Alright. So we see them talking a little bit, and Dan says, "Guess I'll get used to looking like a comic book freak eventually," which, you know, because comics, that right there. Yeah. So they're even aware of it. And then we see an explosion. And Metallo and his goons have showed up to steal that kryptonite. And I love his entry. That pose is just, "You will do what I say, or I will kill you." Right. Dan jumps into the fight, and before anything else can happen, we actually see sort of the same thing from the issue, where he is shot at by one of Metallo's goons, and you see his chest open with all those pieces of hardware poking out.
Which we also saw when he was getting dressed a couple pages ago. He was putting his outfit back on. They showed him putting his wrist gauntlet on, and on his wrist, it looks like one of those old, before your time, Steve Austin action figure, $6 million man, that had like the little circuitry parts that you've stuck in, and there was like a fleshy piece that you'd roll down over it. That's what it reminds me of.
I can see that. And yeah, it was a little before my time, but, you know, I'm still familiar with them.
Yep.
So we see Metallo stick the experimental super kryptonite into his heart cavity machine, and he feels incredible power. Phenomenal cosmic power, and the kryptonite has an itty-bitty living space.
Oh, dear.
I had to work that in.
Yeah, I understand that.
Alright, so Superman is shown flying there, and he says, "First I learn of this secret kryptonite project, and now an alarm sounds from Star. Somehow I've got a feeling that they're not unrelated." And in a great, mostly green picture is Metallo saying, "Fly to me, you great muscle-bound posturing buffoon," which is a pretty accurate description of Superman. "Fly to face Metallo and your doom."
It's great monologuing.
It is.
Because he's talking to nobody, really, at that point.
Yeah, there's some high-quality villain monologuing in well-written 80s comics, and this is a great example of it. And hero monologuing, too.
Yeah.
Because the Superman stuff was the thought bubble at first, but then when Metallo's got the whole building surrounded by kryptonite radiation, out loud, for no reason whatsoever, because nobody can hear him, Superman says, "Moons of Krypton. The entire facility has suddenly been bathed in intense kryptonite radiation. Another millisecond sooner, and I'd have been fried in it."
The days when they explained to you what was happening through exposition.
Yes. But at least they were showing and telling, not just...
Yes.
Yeah, not just telling. Alright, so we see some goons dragging Blue Devil away, talking about how heavy he is, which I'm not surprised. Dude is 7 foot tall, according to earlier this issue, and half hardware. So yeah, he's going to be a heavy guy. And panel focuses down on his chest, and we see it self-repairing.
All this happens while they're taking a smoke break.
Yep. And he stands up behind him, and one of the guys is like, "Hey, Smitty, I think you just warmed up some," right before he clobbers him. Alright, so we see Metallo bossing everybody around, and then Blue Devil shows back up, and he says, "I considered green, but the Green Devil just didn't have the right ring." And he's right, it doesn't. Blue Devil works so much better.
Yeah.
Even if it is impossible to search on Google without getting a college sports team.
Yeah.
So, we see some awesome fighting. Him showing some of that acrobatic skill, taking out a half a dozen guys by himself. They keep trying to fight him. Machines, piloting things, failing miserably.
Of course.
And he makes them crash into each other. He finally gets it down to one-on-one, him versus Metallo. And we cut away from the fight to Sharon. And Sharon's thinking to herself about how Danny will need somebody to talk to, somebody to lean on.
Is that what the kids were calling it then?
Yeah. They were calling it something. We see Superman show up as everybody's bailing out of Star Labs because the Blue Devil freed them. And now we get the awesome fight of Metallo and Blue Devil taking each other on. "Do you see now, you azure-hued cretin? Facing power such as mine, you can do nothing except die." As he is just pummeling Dan, who gets back up and fires wrist lasers. He says, "But you should have figured out by now, I don't stay dead. I mean, since you're so tough, how come I'm still standing and you're lying on your butt?" It's a pretty good one. And he uses his extendo arms, which I've always loved about Metallo.
That looks like a superpower figure waiting to happen right there.
I guarantee it was. I mean, this was the age of cartoons that were nothing but action figures. So as he is choking the life out of Dan, he's saying, "What's that? No clever quips or quick retorts? Can it be that the marvel of my mighty hands separated from my arms, yet still obedient to my will, has left you speechless?" "Yeah, Metallo, that must be it." And then punches the arms away and breaks one of them. He says, "How'd you guess?" And he reveals that he's figured out the way to beat Metallo because he talks too much. And he's like, "First you say you've got kryptonite for a heart, and then you tell me it's kryptonite that gives you all your power. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that you'd be in real trouble if someone stole your poor heart away." And it shuts him down as soon as he grabs it. And thankfully it doesn't kill him, because I don't know if Dan's conscience could survive that this soon in the story.
Yeah.
Because Clyburn pops up and says, "Brilliant. His emergency support systems will keep him alive, but otherwise he's totally non-functional."
She also brings the canister to put the kryptonite away.
Which is smart, because now Superman can show up.
Just in time to take out the last two goons.
With a green hand, for some odd reason.
That
last issue of page 21, his hand is unmistakably green.
Yes. So is the suit, actually. Everything is.
And then we see the next page of him just in a classic Superman pose, cape looking awfully short, but floating behind him in a non-existent breeze.
I love Danny's reaction here. Hey, it's you!
Yeah. I mean, Superman's a big deal at this point.
Yeah, but it's like, it's you! It's just, I don't know why, it just strikes me as funny.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Let's see. I've been hearing quite a lot about the Blue Devil in the past 24 hours. I'm glad to meet you. And Dan says, I've heard about you for a lot longer than that, but call me Dan. Dan Cassidy. Don't give away your superhero secret identity. Come on now.
It's Superman, though. And Clyburn knows about it already, so...
Yeah, let's see. Oh, I forgot about that. Superman asks why Star has developed a super kryptonite, and she's like, well, you see, we felt there should be an effective weapon against, in case, say, a Phantom Zone villain? Yes, in case a Phantom Zone villain escaped while you and Supergirl were away in space. It's happened before. That is not good lying.
No. Especially as somebody who can hear your heartbeat and hear changes in everything.
Yeah. No, there's no use lying to someone whose senses make them a human lie detector.
Yep.
And this is where we figure out how Dan and Zatanna get to meet up, because Superman asks a bit about him, and Dan tells him about, magic and demons and all that, and he says, magic and demons? That's a bit out of my department, but I know someone who might be able to help you. And then we get the classic up and away scene, which I've always liked, but it doesn't really make much sense for him to shout it before he flies anywhere.
No, it works better, I think.
In radio dramas.
Yeah, radio dramas, that gives you a cue that, okay, he's taking off now.
Yeah.
But here it's more, okay, why is he saying that?
Although Dan's Yahoo reaction is totally... something that makes sense.
Oh, exactly.
Because who wouldn't react like that to flying unaided for the first time? Well, unaided by, a plane or anything.
Yeah. Who wouldn't react like that to being taken up, for a little fly with Superman telling you that he's going to basically introduce you to more friends?
Exactly. I'm not the biggest Superman fan, but I would be super excited about that. And skipping over the letters page, because there's some interesting stuff, but we will run way too long if we try and cover it. Looking at the next issue blurb at the end of the letters pages, which says, next issue, we start out in the JLA satellite. Remember it? This story takes place before the Earth-Mars war. Yes, I know it's a little confusing. And then get down to Earth, at least physically. Actually, things start to get very weird very fast. Dan and a new friend of his named Zatanna go underground in search of an unpleasant character named Nibiros, who just happens to have held on to Dan's jet-powered trident. Then things get really interesting. See you in 4 weeks.
Yeah, over in JLA at the time, they were doing the Mars War, and the Martians had showed up and pretty much... dismantled this.
Wrecked everything?
Yeah, just took apart the satellite, which of course led to the Detroit Justice League eventually.
Oh, Justice League Detroit. I have mixed feelings.
I have a very soft spot in my heart for that group of characters, because they never really stood a chance.
Oh, there's a soft spot in my heart, and then there's also a deep place of hatred, so I have mixed feelings. But it did give us the vibe that's on the Flash show.
Yes.
So I'm leaning more towards the good feelings.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the issue?
I think it's a great bridge issue. It wraps up kind of the storyline from issue 2. You find out everything that Shockwave was doing and who that was for. Gives you Metallo. Pretty powerful villain for him to fight. And then set you on your way for the next couple issues featuring him and Zatanna fighting against an old foe.
Yeah, I was a fan of it. Like, it's full of a lot of stuff, but not as much story as the last couple. And like you said, it's a good bridge issue. And the obligatory Superman appearance is fun, but I'm actually much more looking forward to next issue with Zatanna.
So am I. I lost my train of thought. And I'm sorry, they did keep the suits bonded to me, how do I get this off kind of thing going with it, and that kind of moved that story along, well enough in between the fights with Metallo and the goons and stuff like that. So overall, a very strong issue.
Yeah, and it was cool to see it self-repair like that. Like, you had no indication up until this point that it could do that.
Yeah.
All right. Now that we're done with the issue, we're going to ease out of it with our second break of this episode, and then we're going to come back to talk about something that we are super pumped about. See you guys in a few.
To tell you the story of Green Lantern is to tell you the story of the birth of a universe. The origins of DC as a whole.
It's a magic emerald meteor from space in the 1940s.
It's the establishment of the JSA.
It's the birth of the Silver Age.
It's the introduction of a universal police force.
It's the formation of the JLA.
It's the emergence of the multiverse.
It's a crisis in both space and time.
It's an emerald dawn.
And it's an emerald twilight.
It's the brightest day.
And the blackest night.
And the Lantern Cast covers all of this and everything in between. We're Green Lantern's greatest advocates and fiercest critics. We've been fans for years, and it's the reason we're self-proclaimed Lanternologists.
So find us on iTunes and Stitcher and give us a listen. Because the history of Green Lantern really is the history of the DC Universe. And we've got the interviews, commentaries, reviews, and more to back it up.
And we're back. And we are going to discuss team-ups this week. Both ones that have happened and we want to again, whether it just wasn't that great or it was fun enough that we need more of it. Or team-ups that haven't happened and that we really want to. And since you've been reading comics a bit longer, David, call me if I'm wrong on a couple of them. Do you have one first?
The first one that popped into my head was Nightwing. I think Danny's probably around the same age as Dick is, and early mid-20s at this point. They're both very athletic. They're both, obviously Dick has the whole Titans thing, and actually Blue Devil joining up and doing an adventure with some of the Titans would have been a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, that actually would be. Like, I feel like he's probably a couple of years older. Like, I picture Dick as, 19 or 20, and Dan probably around 27 or 28 at this point.
Okay.
Because the way they talk about Sharon's age, like, I could be completely off if they actually mention her age at some point. But the way they talk about her age earlier on makes me feel like she's probably late 20s, early 30s. Because she gets pretty sensitive about it when Wayne implies that she's a cradle robber. And the first time I heard that was when a family member turned 30 and her husband was 29, so...
Yeah.
Other than that, I think that would be a fantastic team-up. Like, even if they are a couple years apart age-wise, I think since they've been in the heroing business longer, it'd be pretty neat to see.
How about you?
My first one that pops into my head, and I don't know if it's happened properly or not, would be Blue Devil and Booster Gold. A different kind of blue and gold.
Yep.
Has that one happened, or...?
Not that I'm aware of, because I think Booster and Beetle were out of the league by the time Danny joined up, so I don't think they ever really had a proper team-up, per se.
And I think that would be fun. Like, as much as I love it, and it was my introduction to the character, not talking about, the greatest hero that you never knew about, time-fixing detective, whatever, Blue Devil from the 2000s. Not Blue Devil, Booster Gold. I am talking about Booster Gold at his campiest. I'm talking about 80s Booster Gold that was stealing Oreos and Bwahaha with Blue Beetle. I want to see that Booster Gold team up with Dan. I think it would be just a damn fun issue.
Yeah, that's definite, got some definite potentials there.
All right, you got any others you'd want to see?
All I have note here says more Zatanna.
Yes.
I honestly would have liked to see more of her in this book, not even necessarily as an interest per se, but I think they had a very good relationship and working relationship that it would have made more sense for her to show up more often than she did.
I agree, and as to more Zatanna being your main note about that, that is always an appropriate answer. Always more Zatanna. She's a character that I've always thought was awesome.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with more Zatanna in it.
No, there is not.
And I will say that I had thought as well the blue and the gold angle, except I would want him to... It would have been cool to see him show up in those earlier Justice League issues and get involved in some shenanigans with Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. And him honestly playing the straight man to those two would have just been hysterical.
I would buy the hell out of that book. DC, why aren't you making this?
They don't like fun anymore.
I know, it's sad. Or very little fun. I would say that's not entirely true. I've heard really good things about Batmite and a few other comics.
Yeah, Batmite and Bizarro are the only two comics I'm actually buying from them right now. And both of them are a lot of fun to read. They don't take themselves seriously, and they just kind of, you know, have fun with the whole thing. Jimmy Olsen and Bizarro on a cross-country trip is just great.
Similarly, I've heard some good things about Justice League 3000, that it doesn't always take itself too seriously, and that it's pretty good,
too. Well, you have Booster and Beetle appearing in that. I haven't caught up on that yet, but I know they're appearing.
Neither have I. Right. Yeah. Another team-up I'd love to see that we did see, but this is something Shag and I have talked about that we both agree was not everything it could have been. Blue Devil and Firestorm.
Yep.
Because that crossover was, like I said, not everything it should have or could have been. And I think I'd love to see it again with, like, the characters themselves are pretty good as far as I'm concerned. It's the rest of the story that I feel suffers.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing another shot at that one. I would have liked to have seen more of the Rogues Gallery, more of Flash's Rogues in this book. You get Trickster for a lot, and I think a lot of the Rogues show up in one issue. I think Dan and Gary could have done some really fun things with those characters.
Inclined to agree.
You know, not too long after this, you know, Ostrander got a hold of Captain Boomerang and started getting a hold of a few other characters, you know, for Suicide Squad, so... But they had such a great handle on the Trickster when they wrote him. You know, I would have loved to have seen some more of that. One team-up I thought of that I thought would have been a lot of fun. There's no way in hell it ever would have happened. Would be a Marvel crossover with Blue Devil teaming up with Wonder Man and the Beast.
Ooh, I'm not a huge Wonder Man fan, but you had me at Beast.
Now, Wonder Man's a stuntman in the movies, just like a certain other character we know.
Who could that be, I wonder?
So there's that connection, and then the fact that both him and Beast are blue, you know, it kind of lends itself to, it would have been a heck of a lot of fun to watch or read.
I agree, and now I'm really sad that we didn't get that as part of the Amalgam stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, if only Blue Devil had been a higher profile character during Amalgam.
If only it had been a higher profile character overall.
Well, that too.
I mean, he did get some recognition early on, and then, I don't know why, but he just kind of faded from obscurity.
Such is the way of so many 80s characters.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And it's always the good ones. It's never the crappy ones. The crappy ones stick around for decades, and then the good ones get written really poorly in the New 52.
Mm,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm one of the few people I know that didn't hate the new look of the Blue Devil in New 52. I just don't think the writing was on par. I actually kind of like the new look. It's a little too slim, but I thought it was appropriately demonic and that they were going for a different route with it, and it was interesting.
Yeah.
Or it could have been.
Yeah, it could have been interesting.
Although that does bring me to the last team-up I had to discuss.
Okay.
I want to see more Blue Devil and Black Lightning, because that's what we got in the New 52, was them as a team, even outside of the four-part DC Universe Presents, or DC Comics Presents, whatever that was they called it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we got, was a four-issue story of Blue Devil and Black Lightning, and even after that, in the one or two issue storyline where the Justice League was trying to figure out who could be a new member, they showed up as a team, and I think it was Blue Devil who actually said, if you pick one of us, you gotta pick both. I'll have to go back and read it, but I think it was right before or right after Throne of Atlantis.
Okay.
Alright. Any more team-ups from you?
No, that about hits the big ones that I thought of, you know, off the top of my head that I would have loved to have seen. Somewhere along the line.
Yeah, a little bit more of what we did get, and a lot that we didn't get.
Yep.
All right. Well, before we take off for the day, I would definitely love to plug at least one podcast, and I think this might be a recurring thing. Talking about, you know, nerdy comic booky sort of podcast. Maybe not even comic books, just nerdy stuff that we like and that you guys might like. And my first one is going to be the Secret Origins podcast, because I've been getting into that after hearing a few good things about it from you and Shag both. And I'm still a couple episodes from being caught up, but I'm digging it. And I love that Ryan Daly, a.k.a. Count Druncula, a.k.a. the one guy who likes Black Canary. I mean,
he's not the only one.
I know. I actually like that character, too. I have to give Shake people crap.
She's hot.
She is. Some of her appearances less so, but her classic costume is amazing. But, yeah, Ryan Daly has been doing an awesome podcast where he brings on a different guest that likes a different character, and they talk about the run of Secret Origins. And the most recent issue or episode is one that I haven't listened to yet, which is about the Suicide Squad.
Great episode.
Yeah?
Yep. Great episode. And he just posted, as we were going through this, the promo type thing, you know, where he puts up the cover and kind of tells what's going to be going on. But the next episode is Secret Origins number 15, featuring the Spectre and Deadman.
Ooh, I want that one to be out now. Depending on the writer, I either love or hate the Spectre, but I have not been disappointed by Deadman yet. He is one of the characters that I don't feel was ruined by the New 52, and I actually really liked his five-issue story in DC Comics or Universe Presents.
Okay.
And he was one of my favorite members of Justice League Dark. And I'm done nerding out about Deadman for now. I might have... Let's just turn this into the Blue Devil and Deadman podcast. And we'll have three-hour conversations about both of them. How's that sound?
Given that Neil Adams did a lot of great stuff on him, and I have that whole reprint thing that they did back in the 80s, I'd be more than willing to hit that one time.
Oh, don't tempt me, because it's already hard enough for us to find an hour and a half to record, let alone 3 hours a day.
Very true. Very true.
All right. Any podcasts you want to plug, David?
As always, you know what? Here, this one. Tales of the Justice Society of America. It's part of, I believe, the Two True Freaks podcasts, and you can find them on iTunes and all that, on Facebook. Just look up Tales of the Justice Society of America. It's Scott Gardner and Michael Bailey. They started back with the 70s reboot of the Justice Society in All-Star Comics and are working their way through. They're currently up to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, and are doing special episodes focusing on each issue of The Crisis, and those episodes are utterly amazing. Most of the episodes are a lot of fun to listen to. When they talk about The Crisis, it's just phenomenal, the amount of work that they put into each and every episode that they do of those. So, want, go give them a listen. Sure, they'd appreciate even more support.
All right, that sounds great to me, and that's one that I've been meaning to catch up on. So, while we're running off catching up on podcasts that we haven't listened to yet, or episodes that we're missing from the ones we do listen to, we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks, and I look forward to talking about Blue Devil with you next time we record.
As do I.
All right, everybody. Rock the horns.
Rock the horns, people.